Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Ole Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Ole Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
Back. Okay, we've got 1 week under our belt covering the legislative session, tracking bills with Ole Insider. If you haven't checked out the blog, the podcast home, oleinsider.com, I delivered a video also this week just giving a little tutorial on how to manage and operate the legislative website to your advantage so you can get up to date on the bill. I think Erica's got some tips for us this episode as well. But in general, I'm excited. I'm having a great time covering these bills. I'm here, as always, with my tag team partner. How you doing, Erica Engelhart?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. And I heard we break some news on this episode.
We do. Okay, let's be quick about this. People don't want to waste your time. Let's give you the rundown for this particular episode. We had action on three bills. We've got interviews with legislators, clips from hearings, covering it all on SB 5000. That's the one where it's going to make the nickname the Evergreen State official. Finally, after all these years. And we've got coverage on HB 1133. That's regarding violent sex predators and creating a new layer to add a layer of contemplation before they get downgraded and or released into the community. Official contemplation, you might say. And we covered SB 5098. That's one of the many gun bills that the Democrats have put forward this session. That's the one that's going to expand these gun-free zones. And then Erica and I are going to get together after we wrap up those three coverage of those three bills. And we're going to kind of discuss and maybe give some tips and tricks on how you can participate in this process and cover bills that you're interested in. All right, let's get to it. First up to bat, SB 5000, brought by Jeff Wilson, Senator Jeff Wilson of Legislative District 19. He's the one who filed this bill. This is adopting the Evergreen State as the state nickname. Hell yeah, finally, after all these years. This one went to hearing on January 14th. We've got links at oleinsider.com on any of these bills we discuss. We'll always have great links at the show page at the website. This one was brought by Senator Jeff Wilson, and now in the last couple days, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He's got over 12 co-sponsors now on this bill. It wasn't hot and heavy in the hearing. It seems like everybody's in agreement on this particular piece of legislation. It's going through the Senate Committee on State Government, Tribal Affairs, and Elections. So it seems like smooth sailing at this point. But I took the time to talk to Senator Jeff Wilson about the bill.
It's a continuous of the retired Senator Jim Honeyford, who originally put this legislation forward in 2009. Having the pleasure to work with Senator Honeyford before he retired, it came to known to me a little bit of the history of the nickname, the state nickname. And let's be clear here now. For 132 years, we have been utilizing this state nickname. We're known for it. We're known for it statewide, throughout the United States, and possibly in parts of the world. We are the Evergreen State. But as a legislative body, we haven't legitimized the use of that. We've spent time with state dinosaurs, hairdos, and other things that we recognize. But when you get to things that truly symbolize your state, and this is for all parties, this is truly a bipartisan statement here, it's past due that we accept it. It's not controversial. It's not going to cure cancer and solve the world's problems. But essentially, when you're on the 95th, legislature starts. We should also lead by example and start off on something that is good for the entire state of Washington. A little bit of 132 years of housekeeping. This bill is due its time now. It will pass the Senate. I need prayers in the House.
That was Senator Jeff Wilson, Legislative District 19. And I want to thank himself and all the representatives that took time to speak to me and Ole Insider. Let's move on to the next bill for the show. All right, one of the bills we are tracking, HB 1133, concerning sexually violent predators. That had a hearing this week at the legislature, and I was able to attend the hearing, and I got quite a few sound bites. Now, one of the first questions that we had as a team at Ole Insider, when we saw that this bill was at the request of the Attorney General's office, there was a question as who wrote the bill. What is the process and procedure here? As I interpreted, if it's written by the Attorney General's office or at the request of the Attorney General's office and the Attorney General is becoming the governor, this bill has a high likelihood of passing. So I spent some time at the Capitol and the legislature getting some sound bites.
Often agency request legislation is our policy discussions that happen within the agency where they identify a need or a gap in law that they want to work to address, whatever that is.
That is Representative Levitt from District 28, Democrat, prime sponsor of HB 1133. She's speaking directly about an agency request bill. In other words, this bill was requested by the Attorney General's office and is considered an agency request bill.
Sometimes agencies request start talking with members early in the development of agency request bills, and sometimes they start talking to members right at the time where they have a draft ready to share, to say, and then start having that conversation about who might be a good sponsor and who's interested in this topic. I mean, agencies pick different people for different reasons. Sometimes they'll pick a new member because new members have a better shot of getting bills passed. Generally, bills are drafted by our Office of Public Research, OPR staff. We may give policy concepts. We may give, you know, here's a challenge, or stakeholders may come and say, here's a challenge. Can you do this in a bill? Sometimes we come with language. Sometimes we don't. But on agency request late proposals, those come from the department.
So in this particular case of HB 1133, it is a culmination of legislation that was proposed in the last session by Representative Couture that passed the House but didn't get further. And at the request of the Attorney General's office, who we just heard there, drafted and wrote the bill to present to Representative Levitt and Couture as a co-sponsor. She did mention something in there called the Washington House Program Research Office as the folks that actually draft and create the bills for the representatives. I started cultivating a relationship with that office once I heard about that. This is all a learning process, so I thought, hey, let's contact these people that are actually writing the bills for the representatives. And it's an interesting office. It's a nonpartisan office. So this is a team of lawyers who put together bills for the legislators, whether Democrat or Republican, and make sure they fit into law and they work properly and are drafted legally.
This bill in particular, working on this time with the Attorney General's office, the Attorney General's office actually had a similar bill. Contents of a similar bill that was introduced last year by Representative Couture, who's a great partner to work with, and he represents the 35th Legislative District, I believe.
Let's hear from Travis Couture, State Representative, 35th Legislative District, Republican, who parts of this bill, 1133, he actually drafted, passed the House, went through committee last year before it died on the floor. Parts of that bill that he wrote and sponsored are a part of this bill, HB 1133.
So what this bill does, essentially, is give more tools in the tool belt to the Attorney General's office, which has an SVP unit, right, who is tasked to defend the state of Washington, the citizens of the state of Washington in court, to make sure that we don't get bad releases of sexually violent predators.
And you can go to oleinsider.com, find episode 2, this show page, and there will be a link to the Program Research Office bill analysis. We'll show you that. And it's important, all these bills, when they go into committee and get to the stage of the hearing, there's a bill analysis and a bill brief that is a part of it. And it's important. Maybe we should read that now.
HB 1133, a brief summary of the bill. 1. Modify certain statutory requirements, restrictions, and procedures related to the civil commitment of sexually violent predators, including the conditions by which sexually violent predators may petition for unconditional discharge or conditional release to a less restrictive alternative. 2. Expands the definition of sexually violent offense to include certain military and tribal convictions. 3. Expands the definition of recent overt act to include any course of conduct that has caused harm of a sexually violent nature, or that creates a reasonable apprehension of such harm in the mind of an objective person with specified knowledge about the perpetrator. 4. Authorizes the Attorney General to issue a civil investigative demand requiring production of specified documentary material or information relevant to the determination of whether to seek the civil commitment of a person as a sexually violent predator. 5. Prohibits a person from earning supervision compliance credit on any cause served concurrently with a less restrictive alternative subject to supervision by the Department of Corrections.
There will be another larger sexually violent predator bill with larger amounts of reforms by Representative Dan Greffey, co-sponsored by myself and Mari Levitt later on down the line. However, these were additional pieces that we could help whoever is in the Attorney General's office and whoever is in the SVP unit to help protect us, the public, against bad releases of sexually violent predators that should not have ever occurred.
And there you go. There's breaking news by Ole Insider, only episode 2, and we're breaking news here that this bill, HB 1133, is only part of a larger effort to shore up and adjust and reform the sexually violent predator laws in Washington state. So look forward to a bill to drop by Representative Dan Griffey, who's also in the 35th Legislative District, and expect co-sponsors Travis Couture and Mari Levitt, Democrat, District 28. In covering this bill, I did go to the Attorney General's office. I sought a soundbite from Attorney General and incoming Governor Bob Ferguson. I was told that they are passing this request bill off to the incoming Attorney General, Nick Brown. So I will seek, as this bill goes through the legislature, I will seek words from Nick Brown as well. But I do want to make it very clear, my theory, my assumption here that I'm going to ask Nick Brown about is this does seem directly related to the controversy that happened in the last 2 years of sexually violent predators being released from McNeil Island into rural and urban communities without a lot of fanfare, meaning without a lot of warning. They were being put in these very low security community shelters without word to the community. And it was quite a controversy at the time. This does seem to be a protective layer added into law to have a more thorough vetting, if you will, of these violent sexual predators before they are released from this extreme housing on McNeil Island into community shelters. So more to come on this bill. It's absolutely expected to move forward. The hearing was very brief. Everyone on the Public Safety Committee seemed to be in agreement with this legislation. I expect it to move out of committee very quickly on the House side.
Wow, thanks, Jay. It sounds like you had a really good time down there. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be down in Olympia, but that's okay because I was able to participate from home. I attended a few virtual hearings the other day. One of them was the Senate Law and Justice Committee, who had SB 5098 on the agenda. That hearing was a little longer than others that I attended because of the controversial bills being discussed, including SB 5098. This is the gun bill that would further restrict places that people can carry guns in public. And there were a lot of people who wanted to be heard on the matter, but what I want to play for you is some of the conversation that happened among the committee members. Take a listen.
Senator Fortunato, is the question coming soon?
So my concern is, how would we address the safety of our children if you're not allowing parents to protect them? And would you be amenable to have liability if they prohibit you, me protecting my children? Would you be amenable to have an amendment that says that liability then transfers to whoever prevents me from protecting my children as an amendment? Wouldn't you agree?
Thank you, Senator Fortunato. But I would say that for me, if you want to keep people safe and if you have a firearm, keep it at home and keep it there and keep it in a safe place. I think you're actually protecting more kids and families by not bringing your weapon onto a public space. That's how I feel.
Gun rights bills always seem to stir up the pot a little bit. People have strong opinions about gun rights. One person that testified, his name was Paul Jewell, and he's from the Washington State Association of Counties. And they signed onto the bill as other, so not pro or con, but other. He suggested that they leave these kind of decisions to be decided locally among the elected officials. Take a listen.
Our members understand and frankly support the need and desire to keep residents, visitors, and really everyone, including employees, safe in public places. However, rather than mandate additional statewide restrictions on areas where weapon possession is prohibited, we believe that to appropriately reflect the diversity in our community, such decisions should be community-based and made by locally elected officials. In fact, many of our member counties already have regulations like this in place, and they're actively working on more. I think most of us can agree that in many instances, it's easy to see a lot of common sense in regulations like these in more urban settings, especially where people tend to congregate. But most of our counties aren't urban at all, and in many of our counties, there are facilities that are pretty remote. They are a long ways from other things, with limited ingress and egress and limited access to emergency services or to be able to call for help. In such cases, you can see it might be very appropriate for someone visiting that place or someone working in that area to feel a lot more comfortable if they had something in their possession to protect themselves. Finally, this bill also comes with a substantial cost for local governments. There are costs for drafting compliant ordinances, for conducting public hearings, for taking legislative action, for buying the signs and all the associated equipment needed to install those signs and the labor. I'll just remind you that RCW 43-135-060 requires the state, when imposing new or expanded requirements upon local government, to also provide accompanying resources. At the very least, we ask that you provide those resources for local governments if you decide to pass this bill. Thank you.
We also heard from several people who gave personal testimony either for or against the bill, but we'll just have to keep following it and see what progress it makes as it goes through this legislative process. If you're at home listening and you're wondering, why is this important? Why are these committee hearings important? Let me just take a moment to address that. They're important because the public can publicly state their position on a bill and have a chance to testify. If you feel strongly about a bill, this is your chance to be heard on the matter. If you miss this opportunity, the next chance you will get is to contact your representatives and encourage them to vote in favor of or against the bill. Bills can get shut down in committee, and bills can gain momentum in committee. This is where the public can have an impact. So what do you do if you want to be heard on the bill? You'll just go to the legislator's website. You'll find the bill page of the bill you want to be heard on. If there's a scheduled committee hearing, you'll see an option to testify. And if you just click on testify, you'll see an option to testify in person, testify remotely, submit written testimony, or have your position stated for the bill's record. Meaning you'll just provide your name, your contact information, and whether you are for the bill or against the bill, pro or con.
Erica, that was an awesome report on SB 5098. Thank you for taking the time to collect all that. What I love most about it, though, is the tutorial at the end where you share how people can go and navigate the site and lend their voice to the conversation, because that's what this is all about, this project.
Yes, absolutely. I think that part's really important. And don't forget that you do have that great tutorial on the website also.
Yeah, and if any, you guys, again, we're trying to create a tool for you with OleInsider.com. So sometimes beyond podcasts, I'll post videos, things like that, that give little tutorials on how you can participate. And I was shocked this week at just how I have been involved in politics for several years now, but how I was able to get in and communicate with the representatives, just how easy I was able to traverse and get their sound bites. After all, these are their bills. They wanted to pass, so any media is good media, I guess. But I was pleasantly surprised at how open the process was to speak with the representatives.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous I wasn't down there to talk to them also. It sounds like you were really busy.
Yeah, the one thing, though, that we're going to have to get our hands on, I think it's an open question, is how far in advance does somebody have to go on the legislative website and sign up to testify or submit their testimony or, as you said, pro, con? Do we know that time frame right now?
I don't know for sure, but it seems like you may want to make sure you do it about 24 hours in advance, because I did try to do a pro for a bill and it didn't show up. They didn't read it off during the hearing. So, but I had done it later in the evening. So we do need to find out that exact time frame, that cutoff time.
I think that's a great question that we will pose to somebody and get the scoop, because that's what we're all about here, Ole Insiders. We're learning along the process with you, and all we want is for citizens' voices to be easier heard within the legislative process.
Yes, and hey, I did have a question for you about something you said earlier. That's just been on my mind. What do you think she meant by newer members may have a better chance of getting bills passed?
That one confused me a little bit, because I would think the opposite of that. In other words, someone who's connected. However, what I think she was referring to are these bills that are handed to the representatives. In other words, these agency request bills that the agency needs to find someone. So much like Ole Insider is providing this tutorial on how citizens can get involved, these agency request bills can go to newer members and maybe have a better chance because
they have less on their plate, maybe, for now.
They have less on their plate. It's a good tutorial for them to be involved in the process. They're available to this agency who's planting the bill within the legislature.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
And then we discovered something we did not know, right?
Yes. Yes, I was curious about this PRO office that you were telling us about.
Well, it was wild. I mean, I love to learn more. I had no idea that this office existed, and I think it's fairly opaque. I'm going to say that it's opaque in its existence, in the fact that I knew about it then after my conversation and after researching these agency request bills, and then sitting in a hearing. All the hearings I sat in, on the sides were these lawyers essentially participating in the committee hearing. And I was like, oh man, who are these people? And I ended up looking it up. It was actually, the office was hard to find. It's the Washington House Program Research Office. And I called one member in particular, and I interviewed him, don't want to gender somebody, an anonymous person. And they basically said that they're nonpartisan. It's a group of lawyers. They write all the bills. A legislator can come to them and say, here's what I'm looking for. But all the bills are crafted in this PRO office. And
that is so interesting, because here I was envisioning, you know, the legislators writing them up in their offices.
Absolutely. We hear about legislators and they have policy people. I always thought the policy people help them. Well, I think there's an extra layer that we uncovered. And in my interview of this person who works in the PRO, they made it very clear to me that all I was trying to do was get the question answered. Did the Attorney General's office write this SVP legislation? This 1133 came at the request of the Attorney General's office. I finally got drilled down to the layer, this PRO office, and I found out, yes, indeed, the Attorney General's office wrote the legislation.
Perfect. Well, at least we got the answer we were looking for. But it's very interesting. I had no idea about this office either.
Yeah, and here we discovered a new layer to the process. And so I guess they work with legislators. I would imagine they work with the legislators' policy people. They work with agencies on this agency request situation. And the way I interpret it, they basically write the law. That's a group of lawyers. They write the laws, they write the bills so that they meet law and meet the proper standards. I guess it's a good thing in the fact that a legislator could come in and say, hey, I want to decrease the burden on property tax for elderly individuals. Well, that legislator isn't going to create the legalese that goes into the bill that adjusts the laws on the books. That's what this PRO office is for creating the legal language in the bills.
That makes a lot of sense, because I know sometimes when they want to change bills or make new bills, other bills need to be amended to fit, you know, so that makes sense that they wouldn't spend all the time themselves going through and looking for all of the relevant bills. So, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they are clearly the person said that they did not want to be recorded, that they felt it would be inappropriate because they are nonpartisan and they didn't ever want to do anything that could make their office not look partisan in any way. So I respect.
But they were still willing to give you the answers, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I called this person up, and it was the first person I called. They answered their phone, spoke with them. I didn't even know this office existed, and I had a great conversation with them. And of course, we're very respectable as citizen journalists and citizens trying to learn more about the process of the integrity of a nonpartisan office wanting to be anonymous and not be recorded. Absolutely, we respect that.
Absolutely, I agree.
I would say another thing that I learned this week is you and I are going to have to get better in terms of what's coming instead of reporting on what was. And so for the audience, we will try to alert you if there is a bill that we're tracking of future goings on instead of reporting on what did go on, so that you have the opportunity to testify, follow along, that sort of thing. But you can always go to oleinsider.com, where as a part of the show notes for each individual episode, I try to be meticulous about creating the links. For example, if you wanted to see the hearing in the committee that Erica visited, I've got that link readily available.
Perfect. Yes, I think that's a great idea. That way we can help keep people informed of what's coming their way, what deadlines are approaching, and then also, you know, give some updates as to what happened as well. I like it.
And in future episodes, I already have just hit a home run from my expectations this week. I've got more sound bites from legislators on some of the other bills we're tracking that didn't have hearings this week. Two of the agency request bills that we haven't talked about yet, I got sound bites from the state treasurer. I got sound bites from an energy council that instigated one of the bills that we're working on. So you're going to have more content, not just from not punditry, but hearing directly from the people that are behind these bills and how the sausage is made throughout the process on Ole Insider. And how do you feel after week one and episode two?
Well, I feel pretty good. I feel like this is a really fast pace going on here. We have to keep up with everything. But I'm really excited to hear some of the other sound bites and to hear from some of the other legislators about their bills that will be coming up here shortly for hopefully hearings in the committees as well.
Yeah, and we might have to drop a bill or two as we kind of get used to this pace. There were more bills that landed today, and we broke news in this particular episode that there's going to be a sexually violent predator legislative bill coming that isn't in existence yet. So, you know, we're trying the best we can as citizens that aren't being paid for this, and there's no monetary avenue.
Incentive.
Yeah, incentive. Nothing's associated. This podcast is free from grift, and it's just there for passion and to help you all out. So there it is. On to the next episode, and we will do our best. Erica, what do you think? You and I are working behind the scenes, just to let everybody know. You and I are getting along famously.
Absolutely, yes.
So we don't know. Maybe we might produce a podcast twice a week. I know Erica is working really hard on navigating the website, so maybe we'll have more tutorials that takes her audio suggestions from this podcast, and maybe we'll put a video out and include that on OleInsider.com. We've also been publishing some of the Ole Insider product on X at For the Good. That's Erica's X channel, at JFrat. That's my X channel. And then the publishing arm of Ole Insider, my media company, at PubSec Media. That's, I forgot my own media company. It's named Positive Intentions Media. All right. Clearly, it's been a long week. Thank you, Erica, for coming along. We're going to wrap this episode up and get out of here.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Looking forward to talking to you soon.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, JFrat on X at JFrat, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.